It's Trainer and the Big Mouse in your feckin' house with feckology. Feckology. The observations that we make and promises we break with no apologies. No apologies. It's Trainer and the Big Mouse in your feckin' house with feckology. Feckology. The observations that we make and promises we break with no apologies. No apologies. So get your lollies and listen to Feckology.
Hello there, listener. Welcome to episode 8 of Feckology. This is the podcast that makes the unfunny relatively funny and the uninteresting relatively interesting. I am the Big Mouse, aka the Friendly Dog, and I am here with my co-host, Trainer. Do you have anything to say to the community, man?
Community, man. Just to say thank you. Anyone who has been listening and reposting and tweeting, etc.
The same old stuff.
Yeah, we had a couple of people retweeting our last one on Twitter there. We fuck all followers on Twitter. So if you do feel like following, please do. It's at Feckology. But had some reposts there from Andrew Whitnell, Kirsty Prince. Thank you for doing that. And we had Andrew Whitnell actually, who was asking a question for the feckologists. Were the teaching staff in single-sex schools also the same single sex? I said, good question. And the answer is no. They were both male and female teachers.
They let some females in there, all right.
There was no follow-up from Andrew there, so I wonder what his reasoning for asking that question was. But anyway, I had a message as well from somebody who listens to Feckin' Metal. He goes by the name of Geordie Rock. His name is actually Grant. Maybe he doesn't want me to reveal that. Oh, well. He just said, hi, Fergal. I'll have to say I'm enjoying the Feckology podcast. Something a bit different to listen to. Humorous observations and chewing the fat. A few good anecdotes as well. So thanks for that, Geordie Rock. Much appreciated. And yeah, you know, thanks to everyone who's been commenting and sharing. We appreciate it. That's how the podcast grows and spreads and becomes bigger and maybe better. Who knows? But yes, that's my message to the community, man. Should we tell people why we say community, man, or is there even an origin for that? I don't know.
There's no reason for that. It's just one of those things that organically happened, and now it's going to happen every week.
Grand.
Now, moving swiftly on to today's topic, this relates to a life experience that you've had just last evening, something that you did in the city center of Dublin. Would you, Trainer, like to reveal to the listener what that experience was and how it relates to today's topic?
So the experience was, I'm in a band. That's not the experience. And we've started doing gigs recently. We did one back in November, which was our first one. And then we've done two ones in the last few weeks as well in Fibber and McGee's in Dublin. We're a rock band called Freak Pointing. This sounds like an ad for the band. It's not really. But we have basically got onto the kind of the gig circuit in inverted commas now in Dublin and hope to get more gigs and that type of thing. And we were going to talk about the quirks and the interesting parts of live performance on this episode of Feckology. So the theme is live performance.
Yes, it's something we've done throughout our development as human beings and adults, and something you're still continuing to do as you are knocking on the door of 40. And it seemed like a good time to talk about this, seeing as though you had that gig last night. How did the gig go, by the way, to ask a really general question?
The gig went great, to give a generalized answer. No, it was better than the last one we did, which was a few weeks ago. That was kind of sprung on us. This was the one we had in mind for a while. And then somebody asked us if we'd support them, which came earlier than the expected one last night. So there was fuck all people at the first one, or technically our second gig, first proper gig with electric guitar and all that. We played an acoustic one back in November, but first proper one was a few weeks ago. That was sprung on us. There was hardly anybody there. It was still enjoyable, but this one last night, there were loads of people there, much more enjoyable, and it went very well. And we were on a bill of four bands. Initially, we were supposed to be playing second, so not first, like, but second. People were confused when I was trying to explain this the other day. They're like, second from the top? Well, no, second on the bill, as in like the second band playing. And then the third band needed to play earlier for some reason. So we ended up playing third, which was quite late. So we didn't start till about 11 o'clock, but it meant that there was a really good crowd there at that time. And they seemed to really enjoy it. And actually, one of the opening bands was playing their first ever gig of any sort. And they were all 20 years old or younger. And it was surreal to be the kind of older veterans, stage veterans, kind of, you know, shaking their hands. And Darren, the guitarist, let them use his guitar tuner, and they're really appreciative and all this, and they're really nervous. And it was very
great.
Funny.
Your experience of your second gig is shining through there.
Well, I mean, obviously, me and you have done gigs over the years for 20 years, for 20,
20
more than that, even.
Years. So I wanted to ask you about the gig in a few different areas, and then I'll relate my own experiences to that. So the first one is, how did you feel physically during the gig, and like in terms of how you felt before it was going to happen, or any nerves or anything like that, or any body sensations?
I felt great physically during it. I was really looking forward to it, and it doesn't really make me nervous doing something like that. I feel like I excel in that situation, and I almost feel like it's a part of me that is innate. I feel like I have to do something in that area in my life. And I think I used this quote on a feckin' check-in before, and I'm definitely using it in the wrong way, but I don't care, because this is what I take from
I'm a rock star. I don't care.
But it's from A Picture of Dorian Gray, which is a book by Oscar Wilde, or A Portrait of Dorian Gray, is it? I can't remember. It's something like that. A man is least himself when he speaks in his own person. Give him a mask and he'll tell you the truth. And I heard this before, slightly paraphrased, and it was, give a man a mask and he'll show you his true face. And I think what it's supposed to mean in that book or that extract is that anonymity makes people tell the truth. But I feel I can relate to it in a performance, from a performance standpoint, in that I feel like when you're on stage, you have this mask on and you can fully be yourself, because it's, you're doing something that's different to the people who are watching you. You're the one that's up there. You have the luxury and the freedom to act how you want, to say what you want. You can sing your own songs. And I feel like that stage aspect gives you this mask, and behind that, you can truly express yourself. And that's how I feel about performance in general. And that goes back to us doing the rap gigs. It goes back to us doing the Irish College Play, that time where we were shy around girls. But all of a sudden, when we got up on stage, we were able to perform and be completely different versions of ourselves. In some ways, I think it's not really the real you. But then in more ways, I feel like it's a truer version of yourself than the one that exists most of the time. And I was on the phone to my mom the other day, and she was saying, just having a general chat with her, and I was telling her I was doing a gig, and she's like, oh, and she goes, you love performing. And I was like, I do. I actually do. So yeah, I felt absolutely great. I really enjoy doing things like that. And even a podcast, let's be honest, is a performance, really. When you get down to the nitty gritty, it's, you have complete control over it. It's a creative process. And when you're speaking, even just speaking into a microphone, you're performing. And I've always loved doing variations of that. Right back to when I was a young child, when I got a talk boy as a present for my birthday from my sister. You might remember the talk boy from Home Alone 2. It was a handheld recording device where you could record your voice and you could speed it up and slow it down and all that. But I used to do like kind of talk show type crap, even back then as a 10-year-old, mimicking things I'd heard on the radio and that type of stuff. And I was just always drawn towards doing something like that in a performative way. So to answer your question in a very elongated fashion, that it felt great. I loved it.
That was every second of it. That was a good answer. That certainly made the uninteresting seem relatively interesting. No, that was interesting. And I can relate to that. I think I know what you mean about wearing the mask. When we've been up on stage, you feel a freedom that you don't feel in other situations. You feel suddenly really confident, and you almost have to be confident. That's the thing. You've no choice but to be confident, and then you're able to embrace it without any inhibitions or thinking, am I coming across as overconfident or am I being an arsehole? You're trying to be a kind of larger than life figure up there.
Yeah,
and that's very freeing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be confident, and you have to kind of be overconfident, actually. Now, unless you're kind of one of these meek singer-songwriter, troubadour, folky type people who's gimmick is not being confident, but that in itself is a performance,
but,
you know.
But secretly being confident underneath.
Exactly. Like, confident in this non-confident performance that you're giving, confidently.
Oh, yeah. Or the kind of the fake meekness in between songs. Like, thank you.
Yeah,
this
modesty. But yeah, and like you said the word arsehole there, you kind of have to be a bit of an arsehole. Let's be honest. Anyone who gets up on stage and thinks they have anything worthwhile to show you is a bit of an arsehole because there's an ego attached to that.
Yeah.
There's a complete arrogance attached to it to think that you have anything worthwhile to offer someone who's your peer, who's your contemporary, to think that you should be standing on a higher platform than them and that they pay to see you and that you're going to perform for them. It's
literally
ludicrous
on a higher
when you
platform.
Think about it. Exactly.
Yeah. And that could only be like half
arrogant.
A foot. Like our very first gig, our first platform was half a foot in Scotstoun Leary. But yeah. It is, yeah, it's ludicrously arrogant. And
yeah, so you kind of have to be a bit of an arsehole as well. And I think everybody has a bit of that in them, of course. Like, and I kind of get the same buzz out of a job interview nearly. Like, you know the way people get like really nervous about job interviews? They're like, oh, I'm no good at interviews. I've always kind of found a perverse pleasure in job interviews. I enjoy them. I'm good at them. I have a good success rate at them. And I also think that's kind of a performance. You know what's expected of you. You go in, you do what you're supposed to do. It's like you're given a role. Like you're almost given the lines and the dialogue nearly, you know? And you just go in and you say it. And you say what they know. What you know that they want from you, and then you know it's like you go in a half an hour, rattle off a little performance, and you're done. And you kind of have to be an overconfident arsehole in the job interview as well. Talk about how great you are.
So it's another type of mask which allows you to be an overconfident arsehole.
Yeah,
an overconfident arsehole mask, but that is appropriate to the situation, and everybody is happy with it. I wanted to ask you as well about physically. Did you feel any adrenaline last night?
Yeah,
or
definitely.
How did you feel during it, or excitement, or how did you feel? What buzz did you feel?
I'll tell you, I was absolutely wrecked because I was in the office 3 days in a row. And in the modern era, I haven't done that. I haven't been in the office 3 days in a row since March 2020. That's how long ago it is since I've done that. So I found after day one in the office, traveling to and from, quite tired. Day two, absolutely knackered. And then yesterday, knackered again. But by the time we got to the gig, get into the venue, people started filing in. An absolute adrenaline rush comes over you. You feel like you could do anything. The energy comes from some reserve you have that's solely for these occasions. And that is plentiful when you need it, exactly when you need it as well.
I remember our first gig about 15 to 20, not our first gig, sorry, our third or fourth gig about 15 to 20 years ago in Eamon Doran's. And the weeks leading up to that, I was suffering from very bad headaches due to stress and other things that were going on. And I remember like just before going on to stage, and I was just really bad headache. And then I got on stage and there was just that adrenaline rush that you mentioned. Mm. And then it was gone. The headaches was completely gone. I felt completely free in my head. And like I didn't have headaches at all. And then funnily enough, the headaches came back later on that evening.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
So it's like a natural painkiller you have in your body, and adrenaline can make people push through injuries, people, you know, running marathons, that type of stuff. Afterwards, they could fall into a heap on the ground, but it's a legitimate real thing and it has legitimate kind of healing and energy giving properties to it. Definitely.
Yeah. And think about that energy thing. When a gig has gone well, it stays with you. You're on a buzz for like a nice buzz for 24 hours or 48 hours after it, but it also, you kind of put it in the tank and you were like, sometimes you go, I've done something meaningful as arsehole-y as that sounds. Like the ego is reinflated and you're thinking, I'm great. You're secretly thinking, I'm great. I did that gig and it went really well.
Yeah. And five people complimented me. And I know that I wasn't as good as they said I was, but I'll take it anyway.
Yeah, but I might believe some of that secretly.
I might in the darkest, most quiet moments when I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I might believe every word of it.
I might replay it in my head.
Yeah.
But that is the nature of performance and it going well. And do you feel you need to drink at this stage as a veteran performer? I'm going to go back just before you answer that to to that gig in Eamon Doran's I mentioned a bit. I think it was our third gig. I remember us both sort of panicking backstage, and there was a few other people around, and we were having cans of cider, and we were trying to get the right mix of drunkenness and being sober enough to perform. And I remember feeling back then that I needed to be drunk to perform, but that for me lessened as I went on. How was that last night for you?
So I won't say need would probably be too strong a word, but I did drink and I wanted to have a couple of drinks before I went on. I didn't get drunk. So that would probably be the difference between the very early lineup gigs that we did and the more recent band stuff that I've done. I didn't need to, but I wanted to be on a bit of a buzz. And I think it's different for a front man, to say an arsehole-y term, a front man
who has to, like myself,
like me, who has to interact with the audience and, like you said, be that overconfident person. I don't think I would have done it as well had I not had some alcohol in my system. So I'm sure I could do it without, but I chose not to, and I think that was for the best. But I was certainly careful about not being drunk. Like, at one point I stopped and got myself a Coke and all that. Like, I was like watching what I had, but I got on a nice little slight buzz, and I think that was necessary for me. Yeah. Yes.
I think I'd be around if we were to perform again. I think we performed last year, and didn't we? Or was it 2 years ago?
Could be last year. I can't remember now.
Time's a big blur. Maybe it was 3 years ago. Who knows?
Could be.
Last year or three years ago. I remember thinking, have 3 pints of Guinness and maybe a Coke or something like that, because you don't want to be like dreary on stage. Yeah. So I think about 3 pints for me is probably about the right amount to perform and to be able to put on the mask. But it also, with rap anyway, it has affected me in the past of forgetting lyrics. And I remember rap battling in our friend Goldie's house. Like, somebody was winding me up and getting me to rap. And I was trying to go back into my back catalogue of raps to perform, and I couldn't retrieve the information
I know.
In my head. And this guy was saying, "You're not a rapper, you're a bullshitter. You don't know how to rap." And I was like, I can rap. And then I'd start, and then I'd stutter, and I eventually ended up being thrown out of the party. Which I
wasn't at that, but I remember hearing about it.
I got thrown out, by the way, Goldie, if you're listening. You threw me out. It was the other guy who was winding me up, and you threw me out straight away. But in fairness, there was some additional politics behind that situation. The guy was affiliated with the Goldie family. I'm sure he doesn't mind me mentioning this.
You threw me out. There's a bit of there was a bit of passion in that, though.
I know. It's water under the bridge now. It was only 15 years ago, and I still remember it to this day.
Resentfully.
Resentfully.
Very good. Yes. So, I was going to say something else there. So with the rapping as well, I found myself in that position too. But I think with rap, you need to remember far more syllables and far more words than a traditional rock song, which for me has maybe two verses and a chorus. The chorus is repeated. I found that when we got too drunk before rap gigs as well, you'd get lost and you'd almost see the pothole coming in your mind, like you're driving
trip
on a road.
Up on the next line.
Yeah. Or you're like, oh shit, I'm fucked. And then you start thinking. And when you're thinking, you're stinking, as Steve Austin says.
And I suppose with rock, I don't know if you've had to do this or rock singers do this, but if you sort of forget your lyrics, you could just go,
you can say anything.
And the pilot of my mind.
I didn't have to do that, thankfully, but yeah, you could absolutely go into pilot of my mind.
And then the final thing I wanted to ask you, unfortunately, I was unavailable to go last night, and a few of our friends, I don't think our friends, our close long-term friends, were able to attend.
No.
And I don't want to throw them under the bus or myself under the bus for not attending, but I just wanted to ask you about the idea of friends attending versus not attending, and not just our close friends, but anyone you know attending versus not attending. I gather last night you didn't have that many people that you personally know attending.
So
there's still a big crowd there.
Darren brought some friends. So did Scoogs, the drummer, and Courtney as well, brought his parents and his girlfriend. And I really, just people that I brought, was just Elaine. No one else could come. And a couple of people were like, oh, I might be able to go. But it turns out they weren't. But I don't really give a fuck, actually, at this point in my life now. I prefer nearly to perform to an audience of strangers, because you've actually done a decent job if they respond rather than responding out of obligation, I think. Now, there is a small bit of social obligation to clap and cheer maybe at a gig in general, but enthusiastic clapping and cheering is not a social obligation. That's a voluntary choice that people make. And we got a decent bit of that. So I'd rather get that from strangers than obligatory praise from family members or friends. But it's nice if your friends can go, of course. But at this stage of our lives where, you know, I don't have any kids, but most of our close friendship group has kids and multiples of kids. And I understand that you're not going to be able to go and watch a band at 11 o'clock on a Thursday night. How would you get home? All that type of stuff. Like, are you going to drive in? So I don't expect people to. If they can, it's great. I don't mind, though, at this point now. I'm happy to play to complete strangers. And we found that with the rap gigs in the past as well. Some of the more enjoyable ones were where you had complete random people in the audience who wandered in off the street, like a Welsh stag party that time, and ended up winning them over. So that's more satisfying.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. Like, as we've gotten older, I think the performances where it's random people, you know, it's valid praise. And you don't have to, your ego likes it. This is real praise coming from this random person that I've influenced them. I'm doing it, Vince McMahon.
It's like, you know, you value what a complete stranger that you may have never seen before and might never again says to you, rather than a close, long time personal friend.
Well, the long term friend praise is coded in their friendship with you. So they're trying. You don't know if they're trying to be nice or if they're biased in some way, or unconsciously they think you're good, but it's just because you're their friend. True. But it's valuable in a different way. But
it would almost be impossible to get the truth, to get to the truth of that matter. Really, coated in loyalty and you know, wishing you well and that type of stuff.
That's out of bollocks. All that bollocks.
I'm going to have to go now. I'm sorry about this. I'm on the clock. So we're going to have to wrap this one up. I think we've gone over 20 minutes anyway.
Yes, it is time to wrap this up. This has been Feckology, some sort of wrapping up voice thing that I'm doing now. And going over to Trainer, we talked about performance, we talked about physical feelings, we talked about psychological feelings, we talked about crowds, we talked about friendships, we talked about adrenaline, we talked about it all. And as we finish up... you have to go. Any final words, Trainer, for the listener?
I'm not going to say something really clever or witty, but I am going to say, if you want to be in a band and you're old, but you've always wanted to do it, stop fucking do it. Find somewhere to rehearse, go in and write shit songs, and then write some of the slightly better shit songs, and just keep doing it. And go and try and find yourself a gig, because I'm 38 years old now and I'm playing in a rock band for the first time in my life and I'm having a great time, and we're not that good and I'm not that good a singer, but I don't give a fuck because it's really enjoyable. So you don't even need to be that good. You just need to be passable and adequate. And if you put your heart into it, it is good. You don't have to be technically gifted, but if you are passionate and if you care, then it will still be good.
Give a man a mask and he'll show his true face. Goodbye, listener.
It's Trainer and the Big Mouse in your feckin' house with Feckology. Feckology. The observations that we make and promises we break with no apologies. No apologies. It's Trainer and the Big Mouse in your feckin' house with Feckology. Feckology. The observations that we make and promises we break with no apologies. No apologies. So get your lollies and listen to Feckology.